Welcome to The Convo. I am your host, Lakeisha Mosley. I'm a mom, a blogger, a brand influencer, and the event producer of my own event management company called The LM Experience. On The Convo, you'll hear conversations with some of the most profound entrepreneurs from all over the world as they share with us their wins and their losses. They'll also share tips and tricks with you that will help you be successful along this journey called entrepreneurship. Let's get started with the show. Hi, Bridget. How are you today?
I am wonderful, Keisha. How are you?
I am doing well. I am doing well. Thank you so much for joining me today on the show. I'm so excited to talk to you. How about you start and tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I am, of course, Bridget Herring Williams, and I am presently a director of development at North Carolina A&T, which is also my alma mater.
Okay.
I served as Miss A&T in 97-98. I received my undergraduate in construction management from North Carolina A&T, and then I went on to receive my master's from High Point University. And so I worked in nonprofit for nearly 20 years and then went into the fundraising side. Mm-hmm. I was one of those that when I was an undergraduate, I loved the interaction that we as students had with our alum. And so I always thought that I was going to go back to the university in an alumni relations type of capacity. But the opportunity presented itself for me to come back in a fundraising capacity in which I was going to have a lot of interaction with our alumni. And so I jumped at the opportunity. I am also a small business and nonprofit consultant. And so I own my own firm where I assist small businesses and nonprofits in the development of their businesses, working on their branding and marketing. And then my husband and I have a logistics company together as well. And of course, I'm a member of, you know, several organizations and very active and involved and give back to my community. And I feel like that's like my main purpose. So I do all of this other stuff, but this other stuff just sort of keeps me connected and keeps me in a place where I can do some of the things in which I love, which is to be connected to my community.
Exactly. Oh, I just love that. And I think community is like so big, especially now. It's so important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. I mean, you know, I was actually working on something with my sorority earlier today. And as you said, it is so important. And it's almost as if when you think that you've made a dent in things, you realize that either the work is just beginning or you have only just grazed the surface.
Exactly.
So, yes.
Exactly. That is so, so true. That's so exciting to hear. So what school did you attend again?
I graduated from the North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University.
All right.
Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yes. So tell us, how did you end up there?
So I had a couple of family members that had actually graduated from A&T. My mother is also the product of an HBCU, but my uncle, who was my role model, I wanted to do everything that he did. Mm-hmm. He went to A&T for undergraduate. He was an engineer, and so I wanted to go to A&T to major in engineering and do everything that he did. And so I think I was probably about 8 or 9 years old when I first said that I was going to go to A&T. Mm-hmm. And that's where I went. And it was all because of my Uncle Kelvin. So that's how I ended up at A&T. And I actually only applied to one school, and that was A&T. So I really didn't have a plan B.
Right.
I was going to figure out plan B if plan A didn't work. Then I was going to figure it out. But yep, that's how I ended up at A&T. And I have never, ever, ever regretted that decision. It was probably one of the most important decisions that I have made in my life that has catapulted and, you know, sort of paved the way for everything else that has happened in my life, from relationships to what I do professionally. I owe it all to A&T.
Okay. See, I love it when you just said that's the only school I applied to. Like, you already knew what you was about to do, sis. Like, it was no other options.
There wasn't. It was, you know, I'm all in. One of those do or die type of situations. But yes, all in.
Oh, wow. That's so amazing. And then to have family, you know, lineage. To go to a school like that. So I have to tell all of my guests that when we talk about that, like, I didn't attend the HBCU. I started at Southern University in Baton Rouge, and then I came home, and then I completed my education at Northwestern in Natchitoches, Louisiana. But I want to ask you, so, like, I kind of missed that experience. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend an HBCU to anyone who's looking to attend school? Although we know school is, like, not even regular school now. But would you recommend one?
Yes. I would say, hands down, I would recommend an HBCU to our students to at least go and try it out. And I understand that every situation is not for everyone.
Right.
And so I definitely respect that. But I would recommend that a student goes to try it out for at least a full year. Not that first semester, but a full year, just to see. Because there is, first of all, there's something about that, that camaraderie and that good family feeling that you get from being at an HBCU. I know that for me, one of the things that we talk about all the time is whenever we return for homecoming, it's as if we're just coming for our annual family reunion. You know, and it's as though there may be, you know, you see people at homecoming that you know that you all were in school together, but they may or may not have been people that you really talked to on a daily basis. You may not have known what their names were, but because you recognize each other, you know, you're still going to speak or hug or something, because it's almost like you're coming back home. You're coming back home to and you're seeing your cousins, you know. And I think that feeling of your professors being, you know, being for you, they are they were engaged. If you were missing from class, they knew that you were missing from class. I had administrators that they knew about my family. So if I, you know, if they saw me, they would ask me about my grandparents, because they knew, just based on conversations with me, that my grandparents were very important to me. And so, you know, they would ask me, you know, how they were doing. And that's huge. You know, exactly. Just based off of a conversation. And then the next time you see me, you're asking me, well, how's your grandmother? And I know that, you know, your grandmother was, you know, planning to have surgery, and, you know, what happened? Is she okay? And how's everything going? You know, and I would say and recommend that every student, at least every Black African American student, should give it just 1 year of an opportunity, just right. to see how it will fit for you. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, everyone's experience is going to be different. And therefore I do respect that, but to just give it a try, because the relationships that I have now are the same relationships that I developed with people in 1993 when I first walked on to A&T's campus. Like, right. we met each other in the hallway of the residence hall when everyone was sort of moving in, you know? That's where we met each other. And here we are over 20 plus years later, mm-hmm. and we're, you know, now we're mothers and fathers, and, you know, we're asking about each other's children, and children are our children. It's funny because now our children are now, you know, freshmen and sophomores at A&T, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I would just say to just give it a try, that it will, I do believe that it will be one of the best decisions and best experiences that you would ever have in your life.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's so true. Like, for me, I got pregnant, so I went home, and my mom was like, okay, you're not going back with that baby. So what you gonna do? Mm-hmm. And yeah. I didn't want to stop my education. And so yeah. I did go there, and I kind of, I never, in all honesty, Bridget, I never missed the experience. Like, I never even thought about it anymore again. And mm-hmm. then after, I guess, like, a friend of mine, he invited me to his homecoming at Prairie View. And I went, and I was like, oh my God. It was like the cookout times four with all of your friends, and you saw everybody. Everybody knew everybody. It was just so much fun. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I missed this experience. Like, of course I went to homecoming at my school. It's nothing like that, you know, because it's predominantly white. But it was just so much fun. It was overwhelming. I will say that. It was overwhelming for me, just only because it was so many moving parts, and you like kind of want to see everything.
Absolutely.
You kind of get into everything. And so for me, it was a really good experience. So I still feel like I get some of that experience when I go to that homecoming event, because people I know, like, that are in my sorority and stuff, I see them because that's where they graduated from. Mm-hmm. But I totally, totally agree with you on that, because it wasn't until my daughter went to an HBCU that you really get a lot more of our history. You really mm-hmm. get to see people who look more like you, who can relate to you. And you ain't apologizing for saying what it is about what our culture is.
Yes, yes. And you're walking all day, and you're literally looking at people that look just like you said, and it's not a every 10 people or whatever, or you're the only one in a class. Right. You know, it's as almost as though the world is flipped on the campus of an HBCU. Right. And so, yeah, absolutely. And to your point about just the culture and the things that you learn, like I did, because like I shared in the beginning, that my mother went to an HBCU, and just very much like your situation, my mother actually started out at Elizabeth City State University, mm-hmm. and which was 4 hours away from her hometown. And she got pregnant with me her freshman year. And of course the same thing, but she had, you know, her family was very involved, and so was my dad's family. And so it was like, yeah, you're not taking that baby back to school. You're going to come, you know, closer. Right. And so she ended up transferring to Fayetteville State University, which was only about maybe an hour and 45 minutes or so away from her hometown. So she was, you know, she was still close enough to be able to get back, you know, to me whenever, you know, whenever necessary. And be home on the weekends and that sort of thing, right. and not stop her education. And so, you know, she was blessed in that regard, just as it sounds like you were, to have a supportive family.
Right.
But one of those, one of those things. It was just like being at that, being engrossed in an HBCU and just kind of learning. Like I was probably about 11 or 12 when I received my first sweatshirt, and the front of it said the Black of the College, the Black of the College, the Sweet of the Knowledge. And then on the back of it, at that time, we still had 117 HBCUs. Right. And so all of them were listed, you know, on the back of my, on the back of my sweatshirt. And so I knew certain things about, you know, Black history, and I knew some of those little known Black history facts. But it was when I went to that HBCU and sitting in those classes with some of those professors that I got even more, and I learned even more, because it wasn't taught, you know, in the, for the bulk in any high school. And I was fortunate enough my senior year of high school to have a social studies teacher, which was, you know, US history. And she taught a Black history class, and I took it, and it was an elective. And so I learned a lot of interesting things from her. I'll never forget her, Mrs. McFadden. And I learned a lot of different things. But once I came on that campus, that's when I started learning all kinds of things about, you know, Black people. And it was just like, if I didn't already know that we were a dope people, I learned it, you know, when I graced that campus, I learned it then.
Wow. That is so true. Like I felt that just being there, you know, for the first time, like I actually like felt that. So I think that's like, you know, really, really cool. So tell us that experience, you know, you talk very vividly about that experience and I love it. How did it prepare you for life beyond the campus?
So, as a, while I was a student, I was a student leader, and I was a part of, you know, several organizations. And, so being like the president of New York, New Jersey Connection, and just a part of like, the organizations that were aligned with my major and that sort of the thing, I had a lot of, interaction, you know, like with our administration and with deans and professors. And so I was able to sit at the table and be a part of some of the major conversations in terms of decisions that were being made for the student body. And then in my role as Miss A&T, even though at back then it was considered to be a ceremonial role, it was still a part of the Student Government Association. And so I was a part of that. And so it really taught me how to be a leader. It taught me how to find, you know, my voice and to be able to articulate in a manner in which I was able to do it without it being laced with emotion, but being laced with the facts, and being able to get my point across without getting angry, and just really in general, being able to articulate myself and being able to carry myself in situations that were not always, you know, the best, and they weren't always, comfortable situations. And so when I graduated, as I shared earlier, my major was construction management. When my first job out of college, I was one of three Blacks that were on the professional side of the company that I was with. Of the three Blacks, I was the only female, and I was 22 years old. And I was a 22-year-old Black female in a predominantly white male field. And so every, just about every meeting that I was in, I was one of two females. There was myself, and then there was the admin, because she needed to be there so that she could take notes.
Mm-hmm.
And engaging in those conversations and some of the jokes that would be made and the comments that would be made, as if I, number one, couldn't catch on to what was being said. Mm-hmm. And number two, sometimes that I wasn't smart enough to figure out what was going on, or that someone just, you know, I didn't earn my degree. Someone just kind of handed me a piece of paper, and surely she can't know anything about, you know, this industry, right. You know? And so I had to really hold my own,
mm-hmm.
when I was in construction. But the one thing about that is that I got up every morning at 4 o'clock in the morning to come to something that I absolutely, I didn't love it like I thought I was going to love it. What I loved was the volunteering that I did when I would get done with work and mm-hmm. would go and spend a couple of hours tutoring kids or reading or whatever at the local Boys and Girls Club. And so after about a year or so, that's when I was like, you know what? I want to do something that I love. I want to get up every morning and go and do something that I love. And so I had a career change, and I went to the Boys and Girls Club, and I actually became a director at the Boys and Girls Club. And that's where my career in nonprofit actually started. And even in that, as I began to work my way up in with the Boys and Girls Club and in nonprofit, again, here I am, sometimes the only African-American or one of two African-Americans, mm-hmm. and that would be myself and an African-American male, and then maybe the only female, even in nonprofit, you know. And I was constantly sitting at the table with white males.
Mm, and so yeah.
Being able to communicate, articulate, and do it without that emotion that they sometimes want to put on females,
mm-hmm.
that we're so emotional and that we, you know, we get so, no. I'm sitting here and I'm looking at you all lose your wits over things. And I'm thinking, so who's the emotional one?
Exactly. Exactly.
And I do believe that just some of my interactions in undergrad and with my peers, and some of those late night debates that we would sometimes have, you know, in the SGA office or in the lobby of the residence hall or even in the room, you know, where we're just having just late night debates and just talking about all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I think that those things really truly prepared me for my career and being able to go into any room in any meeting and be able to hold my own. And so I am one of those that if I do not know, I will say, I don't know, but I will get back to you.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to sit there and just make up a whole bunch of, you know, stuff just to have something to say, just for the purposes of sounding smart. Because whenever I say it, you're going to know, you know what, let me not play with this one.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and I am very much one that I am one. I have very few words, but when I do, you know, okay, yeah, let me just back up off this one. So right. I'm going to say what I mean and mean what I say, and I've moved on. There's nothing else to say about it. Next.
Exactly.
You know, and I do believe that my experience at my HBCU just truly prepared me to have this level of confidence you know, in myself and this level of and what I bring to the table.
Right.
Because I know that bar none, my degree holds the same weight as someone else's degree. And I don't care where you received your degree. I know that I can come into a room and my degree is going to hold the same amount of weight. And I'm going to be able to carry my own the same way that you feel like you're going to be able to carry your own. Right. My degree is not any less. It's not any less than. You know, and in my eyes, it's more than, but it's definitely not less than. And right. I'm proud to tell people where I went to college. So.
Yeah. And see, that's a whole different experience for me. And I guess and I don't know, it could be, you know, because I attended a predominantly white college or maybe the college I attended, like I never had those issues, which I will say, Bridget, on the back end, when I would get into spaces where I had those issues, I almost I wasn't prepared because I didn't, again, I didn't attend a school where, you know, there was, where that happened or things like that prepare me for, like I was invited to the table. Like I had a place at the table and it was because Susie brought me to the table. So I didn't know how to navigate when I did get out and it was like, oh no, well she can't sit with us, you know, or, you know, those type of issues that come up. And so it was me being able to like be quick on my feet.
Right.
And learn how to like navigate through those type of issues because, you know, I wasn't really prepared for those things, you know, at the school that I chose to attend.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, being on an HBCU campus, because we're all the same,
right.
You know, I'm in a situation where, you know, hey, we're all the same. We're all doing the same thing. And so I'm going to be there. And so when I got out, it was like, that was my expectation. Listen, I'm going to bust up and bust through any door I want to because exactly. Because I come from an environment where, hey, we're all the same. And I'm not going to let you now control that for me. You know, like my grandparents and my great grandparents, they already did that for me, you know? So I have just as much of a right to be here as you do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
But that HBCU gave me a whole nother oomph of courage.
Right. Right. I love it. I love it. So tell us about the collaborative, the book. Tell us about the HBCU experience, the HBCU University Queens Edition. Tell us a little bit about that.
So the HBCU Queens Edition, the Royal Queens Edition, is a compilation of stories of HBCU Queens that hail from, I guess it's probably about 6 or 7 different HBCUs, and we're all telling our story and our experience and how our HBCU and our reigns as queens prepared us to be the women that we are now. And the book actually launched on July the 7th. And this past Saturday, we had our virtual book signing, and it was awesome. It was supposed to last for an hour. And I think we probably lasted for maybe two hours or more. But it was just a great conversation that was a very organic conversation. And it was one of those where each queen queen read a snippet from her chapter and then sort of talked about it a little bit. And so it just turned into a true testimony type session where we were just all just kind of sharing and just talking about different things that have happened in life. And so that's what the book is about. And our desire is that some young lady is going to pick that book up and she's going to read it, and she's going to be able to identify with someone, and maybe everyone in the book in different aspects, and say, wow, if she was able to get over that hurdle, then surely I can get over it. And so the book is just really an opportunity to highlight the universities in which we represent it, but to also just serve as a testimony for young women, right, and that they will be able to see some of themselves, you know, in each of us, and to know that some of the things in which they are experiencing, it's not new. You know, we have one queen that is almost 50 years removed. Mm-hmm. And then we have, you know, one that I think graduated maybe like a year or two ago. And so I think that it's going to be something in there for everyone, and to see that some of these things, that it's women's stuff. And right. it may change, the year may change, but and slight things in the situation, but ultimately they don't change. And a lot of us have some of the same experiences. Mm-hmm. We have some of the same triumphs and the same, you know, tribulations. And it's just an opportunity for you to be able to engage and say, wow, look at their joys and those things that they were able, and those obstacles in which they were able to overcome. Because I think that sometimes we get so caught up in seeing the crown, right, and see the glory of the position, that individuals forget that we are that the queens are, they're still human. Right. And so they're still going through the same things that everyone else is going through on a daily basis. We're just having to do it and wear a smile.
Exactly.
That's
exactly
what's expected of us.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I know too, you know, being a queen, it's more so about service. It's not just about that crown. Like you said, it's a lot that you have to deal with. There are a lot of obligations and responsibilities that that come with that mm-hmm. crown, that people think, oh, it's all about the crown. Yeah, you may think so, but guess what?
Yeah. And that's just a drop in the bucket, you know? Exactly. And I know that, like, one of the major things that I did whenever I was queen is that I started a mentoring program called Aggie Queens, and it was with a local middle school. And we, you know, I had peers that joined. And so on Saturday mornings, these young ladies, their parents would drop them off at our student union, and we would work with them for hours, and we would take them on field trips that were like walking distance to, you know, to our campus. Mm-hmm. And we would do different sessions with them, you know, self-esteem and conflict mediation, and just different things that were on their level as middle school students, right, and not really even understanding the impact that we were having at that time, because of course, you know, we were probably between like 19 and I would say 21 years old, and we're mentoring students that were, they were what, 12 to 14 years old. So we're mm-hmm. really not even that much older than them. They're just looking at us, you know, like big sisters, but not even really understanding the impact that we were making. But I mean, it was very much so about servanthood.
Right.
You know, in everything that we did. So myself and my court, we were always, you know, present and accounted for when exactly. there was service to be done, and going to schools and tutoring and reading and whatever, you know, whatever it looked like, because we understood that there were young eyes looking at us and, you know, what we were projecting.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yep. Oh my gosh, I love it. I love it. That is like so awesome. So awesome. So I definitely have enjoyed our time today, Bridget. Yes. So before we go, I want you to tell us again what you do, what you and your hubby do, and then tell us how we can connect with you.
Okay. So my full-time, I am the Director of Development for the College of Science and Technology at North Carolina A&T. But I have a business consulting where I support small business and nonprofits, and you can find me at newvisionsmanagement.com, and that's all spelled out. Okay. newvisionsmanagement.com. And then my husband and I, we have a transportation and logistics company called Aubrey Logistics.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can find me solo, just knocking it out and just trying to be of service, you know, to my community and to those that are trying to make our community better.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, at newvisionsmanagement.com. My Facebook is Bridget Herring Williams, and my IG is Queen Behavior. Queen B-E-E Havior. Queen Behavior.
Okay, great, great stuff. And I'll make sure all of that is included in the show notes, like how they can contact you, as well as, you know, info about you. Now, tell us also where we can get the book.
So you can actually go to get the book at amazon.com. And it is available. It is now a bestseller. So we are really, really excited about that.
That but you is can, great.
Yes. And it is, we have it in print and it's downloadable for the Kindle. But you can purchase the book at amazon.com.
That is so great and awesome to hear. Thank you so much for joining me and definitely sharing your experience and, you know, just enlightening us about, you know, the HBCU experience and what you do and how, you know, we can possibly, you know, contact you for help with services, but how you're serving others. It was just great, great chatting with you.
Thank you, Keisha. This has been wonderful, wonderful. And thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
I certainly appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you for tuning in to The Convo. I hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to subscribe on Anchor or Apple Podcasts.